Keith, can you tell us what the room looks like?
It's quite crowded. It's very crowded. There's people, reporters. The auditorium has not filled up because everybody's in the main area where the podium is set up. And
you say Alan Stern is taking pictures?
Well, they're taking pictures of Alan Stern.
Ah.
He's down front. I don't know if I can get close enough to get him to talk to you.
Well, why don't you try? Give it a try. Yes. Dick and I both. Yes. Try.
Okay.
This is live radio, Dick. This is kind of like it was 50 years ago.
It's changed.
Except we are missing the component of a living spacecraft.
You're right.
This will be a neat trick if you can pull this off.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Did we lose Richard Grossinger?
Michael. Oh, I'm here, Richard. I've just been on mute. So.
Okay. Just want to know we haven't lost you in the depths of Plutonian space.
No, I've really enjoyed hearing you at 19, hearing just how much of the present you was there and just how much you've also grown. And that's all in the vibration of the voice.
I'm just glad Dick didn't,
Alan, can I just
the rest of it.
Seconds. Live radio. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Stern.
Yes, sir.
How do you feel? What do we know?
Ladies and gentlemen, please get a flag for the celebration, and there is plenty of additional seating in the tent. Thank you.
It's amazing.
I mean, obviously the pictures are blowing you away, as they all the rest of us. What do you think you're seeing?
Well, what we're seeing is a really complex double planet. I think it's the most science fiction planet we've ever seen, and it's probably more complex place than Mars. And for a small, small thing. Good things come in small packages. Pluto's one of them.
It sure looks amazing. I mean, now when we see the 13th photograph, the one that was taken a few hours ago, are we going to get really significant increase in resolution over the previous?
I think you'll be pretty impressed.
So you've pretty obviously impressed. Seen it. For the benefit of our audience, which is literally all over the world, that we just talked to Alden Tombo. Talk to me a minute about the Pluto definition. Talk to me about why Pluto is a planet and should remain a planet, and the IAU should never have done the dumb thing it did.
Yeah, well, I don't want to bash those guys, but, you just take a look. It's obviously, you don't know what other word to use for it other than planet. It's got all the attributes of the planets. I don't know if you know this, but Pluto's atmosphere is bigger than the Earth's, and Pluto's sphere of influence, where it can keep moons, is twice the size of the Earth's.
Is the atmosphere, because of the scale height, is so different?
Yeah, it's exactly because of the scale height. That's right.
And the Hill sphere, the gravitational influence of Pluto, extends out how far?
It extends out about 7,000 miles.
Wow. So this is really a little mini planetary system.
It really is, very much so.
So
and,
what are you going to do?
This is the most common type of planet in the solar system. We just need to get used to the fact that the Earth is not as typical as we thought. And that I think it just makes the Earth more special.
Well, I do, too. And I've always see my reasoning for keeping Pluto a planet. And I don't know whether you would agree or not, is that Pluto, a la, Alden's dad, is the last place we discovered in the solar system before the space age. It's part of that classical retinue of worlds that we looked at when we were confined to this world. And that perspective should not be lost historically or culturally just because the physical definitions are kind of moved around a bit.
I agree with you. I've got to go do something else. Thank you for this interview.
Alan, so much thank you, and good luck with the rest. Well, I think we ought to tell everybody that what we're hearing is not the New Horizons spacecraft longing to come home. Okay.
Pretty funny, Pluto Muzak.
Well, see, this is what happens when you don't have real data. Even NASA has to fill.
Right, but of course, what they choose must have some meaning to them anyway.
Well, yes. Well, you're our meaning guy. What do you think it means?
To me, so far, all it means is we're hip. It's no longer 1930.
No.
And it's no longer 1965. Listen to us.
I know. And Keith Morgan, what's going on?
Yes, Rich.
What's going on?
People are still getting in a position. I thought they would be starting this announcement already.
Yeah, well, they're certainly late. They were actually supposed to pick it up at 7:30 your time, and we're now 40 minutes past that. We passed the 8 o'clock hour.
Actually, we're at 7:08 our time.
Yep.
Yeah, by the way, great coup getting Alan Stern on.
I certainly agree with you.
I don't think that he knew he was talking to Richard Hoagland.
It doesn't matter. He's talking to the world.
I know, but...
And I just find it really cool that he agrees with me on the reasons
right,
of Pluto.
I know. Yeah. In my image, he comes in, he hears a voice, he thinks, wow, that was a really intelligent scientific reporter. And then, you know, he walks away and somebody says, you were just talking to Richard Hoagland. And he goes, oh, no.
Well, do you know, Richard, speaking of the weird things that happened between you and Dr. Stern, I had two Lowell people lined up to be on the show this morning. One is an historian from Lowell who was somehow circulating in that crowd. And Keith, if you want to go find him and stick a headphones on him, it might be an interesting experiment. The other was a professor of history at Kalamazoo College in Michigan.
Yeah. Who
had written this wonderful book on Lowell, the Boston Brahmin, and his business activities and acumen in the Far East and in Asia and Japan. And we were going to talk about the seminal moment of enlightenment when Lowell changed his entire perspective and dropped everything he was doing, changed his whole life, his finances, his living space, his whole situation, and moved to the middle of the desert in Arizona and built the first major private observatory in the American Southwest. And both of those Lowell people, after a 24-hour period, politely sent me notes. Actually, the one guy didn't even send me a note. The professor did, saying that they had other things to do and that they could not be involved in the program. So, of course, I suspect that the fine hand of NASA was involved when they found out that I was the one that was going to be doing co-hosting with Dick this special. So
I sort of said I don't think Alan Stern knew who he was talking to.
Well, Alan is made of sterner stuff, and I think that was – because I remember I had a friend go through channels to get him to do an interview, and he'll be very pleased that somehow something succeeded, and we got exactly what we needed from Dr. Stern. And the fact that he says we're going to be totally tantalized by the new images, which are not the closest. Remember, the way this works is they're going to be giving us in a few minutes – an image that was taken hours ago, probably 12 hours ago, when the spacecraft was maybe 500,000 miles away or closer to Pluto, but still not 7,000. So we'll have a huge amount of resolution increase to live through when we get the new images that were taken a closest approach now that will not be beamed back until tomorrow night when they turn it around and they send another blast of imagery. Remember, 42 minutes for each LORI high-resolution telescopic image, and that means in those 42 minutes you cannot take data from Pluto, which is then receding in the rearview mirror, which of course must be intensely frustrating to put together this kind of a timeline where you have to make this Hobson's choice, data or communications, data or communications. It must be awful, and I could kind of get that sense of frustration in some of the things that Dr. Stern was saying.
Yeah, the other thing about the interview with him that you did was that he not only reclaimed Pluto as a planet, but he elevated it to number one, even more interesting than Mars. And
yes.
What mythically could be more interesting than Mars, given our whole history?
Well, in our book, Pluto, New Horizons for a Lost Horizon, see, I got the plug in. Well, it's important because I want people to get the book, not because it's going to wind up in any cash register, but because without reading this book, you will not have the appropriate context for our conversation tonight. Richard assembled some really interesting people, in this book, and it's that total picture of Pluto, both physically and culturally, symbolically, metaphorically, mythologically, astrologically, the whole package, which is part and parcel of what the experience is that we're going through this morning. And what I find intriguing is that I've independently arrived at the idea that there was some Pluto-Mars connection that Lowell was trying to tell us. And what Alan Stern very elegantly did,
right,
without saying anything, is to reinforce everything I say in my chapter in New Horizons.
Right. Very interesting. And then the second thing I was going to say was he presented, and I think that this is the cutting edge image of Pluto going forward, a mini solar system.
Yes. It's got five moons.
Yep.
Now, Dick Bertel, are you around? Are you with us?
I am right here, yeah.
Okay. When you looked at the data that I kept sending you down the pipe so that you'd be up to speed for this morning, did you notice that Pluto is this little miniature solar system? It's got these five moons whirling around. The Charon-Pluto system are almost like a double planet. I mean, Pluto is, what, 1,500 miles, give or take? Charon is 750, give or take. So it's
they both dance around a common orbit between the two.
Exactly, and you can see it on the approach photographs that they're twirling around a point in space that's not inside Pluto. They're both dancing around a common center that's a lot closer to Pluto because Pluto is more massive, of course. But I mean, this is a classical demonstration in
like
these,
the Earth and the Moon.
Exactly, except the Earth barycenter, meaning the point in space right, where we both twirl around, is still within the Earth. It doesn't leave the Earth. But the Pluto Charon system, it's well outside Pluto, so you can see like on a dumbbell that's set on an off axis. You can see both these bodies twirling around every 6.4 days, which is one Plutonian day, and one Charon month is equal. Because Charon is only something like 12,000 miles away from Pluto, which is much closer than 250,000 miles for our moon. So in the imagery, we've been seeing Charon and Pluto, as they're getting close optically and getting farther away as they orbit around each other, because it's the clearest example of two bodies orbiting around each other and not one body orbiting around another body. So for
Do
all
they
these
call
reasons...
It Charon, by the way, instead of Charon?
It's called Charon because it was named by, I'm trying to remember the guy at the Naval Observatory, Christie, who was a friend of Tom Van Flandern, our former colleague who is no longer with us, which is really a shame because he would have an extraordinary time of it this morning. Mm-hmm. His colleague, Christie, also died, I believe, in an auto accident shortly after he discovered Charon. And they discovered it because in taking photographs from Earth, from the U.S. Naval Observatory station in Flagstaff, the Naval Observatory actually has a telescope not far from the Lowell Observatory, which is managed by the Lowell Observatory, and it was that telescope, a very large reflecting telescope here in very clear desert skies, that in 1978, I believe, on a long exposure photograph, Christie noticed that on the Pluto image, there was this asymmetrical bump on the side of the overexposed blob on the photographic plate that represented Pluto. And this bump moved around in a strange pattern, and soon they realized it was an orbit, that it had to be a moon, and it wasn't until Hubble, decades later, that we actually got our first clear picture of a little twink called Pluto, and alongside it another little twink, dimmer twink, called Charon, which is its moon orbiting this common barycenter that they both twirl around.
Are we going to get pictures of Charon, by the way?
Oh, yes.
The clarity of Pluto.
Oh, much better. Much better than we ever got from Earth. Charon is about half the size. It'll be about twice as far away from the spacecraft, the closest approach, as Pluto is. So it's roughly 15,000 miles away right now. And what they're doing is they're interleaving in the computer timeline close-up imagery of Pluto, close-up imagery of Charon, close-up imagery of Pluto, close-up imagery of Charon as we move past,
okay,
and the perspective angle changes with these two spheres, these two spherical bodies, which, of course, are also moving in space. So calculating for the computer on the spacecraft has to know where it is within a mile or so in space 3 billion miles from Earth. Imagine that navigation. So it can point the instruments at the right place, because otherwise, if it's at the wrong place, it points its instruments at a certain part of the sky, and the bodies are not there, and you're just going to get photographs of black space. And, of course, that's a tragedy, because you'll never have this opportunity again, because you're never going to go back. You're going to keep going and going and going. So the timing and the computer calculation and the optical navigation on the way in, they've been taking all these LORI images, these telescopic images with the equivalent of an 8-inch Celestron telescope on the spacecraft, because as they photograph Pluto and Charon against the star field, just as Alden was describing finding Pluto in the first place, by doing it against the star field and knowing those positions and knowing the position of the images of the two bodies you're approaching, you can calculate in celestial mechanics where you are in space down to within a mile or two. And that, coupled together with the radio tracking, when they do radio tracking, gives them a very precise orbit. So we should get very, very accurate imagery of all of the things that they're trying to target, which is Pluto, Charon, and the other four little moons, which are no bigger than a bread box. Well, actually, they're somewhat bigger. They're like 20, 30 miles across, but they're just little shards compared to the two big guys, and yet they're all in the same plane, and they all orbit around the Pluto barycenter in resonant multiples of the Pluto orbit around Charon and vice versa. And the paper just came out on the Axis paper server at Los Alamos, which, Richard, you know, is the place they publish these cutting-edge papers before they appear in the journals. And there's a group of dynamicists who have now calculated that even if Pluto and Charon were created by a mutual collision, which is the current preferred natural model for Charon and Pluto being out there, that something hit Pluto billions of years ago, spalled off Charon, which then assembled itself gravitationally orbiting Pluto, and that the little guys, Nix and Cerberus and Styx and the other moon, Hydra, are the result of that collision. From this new paper, it turns out dynamically that does not work. You cannot get beautiful circular coplanar resonant orbits of the Pluto system by any known natural gravitational accretion process.
Right. So it's not just pretty, and you've pointed out, it's not just a mini solar system, it's a mini machine, and it's also a mini sacred geometry.
It's a mini sacred geometry machine, it's a mini resonant orbital machine, and it's pumping the physics in these resonant orbits in a unique way that no other object, no other body, no other planet in the entire solar system is doing in the torsion field model. And so that's why I think one of the hidden aspects of the mission is that they're going to be measuring the torsion fields of Pluto and Charon during the flyby, just like we did during an eclipse here on Earth with the Accutron technology, only they're not telling us what they're measuring, in addition to the mainstream measurements which have been published, because, of course, the torsion field work is that which you are never supposed to talk about.
Let me ask you a question.
And that's why Nick? I don't think Alan Stern knew he was interviewing Richard Hoagland.
Well, we wouldn't have gotten into all the details of this anyway. There's just no time. But it's very nice to have his reaction. And it's on record that he and I agree that it should be a planet, and for the reasons. And I think we're going to see some dramatic changes. And I think this is going to be a bold prediction. I think after this flyby, Pluto is going to be reinstated as the ninth planet of the system that it should have always been.
That, I think, would be a wise thing to do, considering what we've learned so far and what we're still going to learn from this flyby. Dick, why did they not consider doing an orbital run around Pluto? Why are they doing just a flyby?
Well, it's a very simple reason. No energy and lack of political will and lack of a propulsion system that could any reasonable time get you into orbit around Pluto. Remember, this little system is 3 billion miles away from us tonight or this morning. It took them, with a gravity assist at Jupiter, you know, they basically sent New Horizons off on an Atlas V rocket. It became the fastest spacecraft humans have ever sent from Earth on chemical propulsion. it got to Jupiter in a few months. They then made a screaming left-hand turn around Jupiter, aiming for Pluto. Jupiter's gravity did a slingshot effect on the New Horizons spacecraft, accelerated it by stealing a little energy from Pluto, from Jupiter, I'm sorry. So Jupiter dropped toward the sun. By the way, back years ago with Kraft Ericke, we were bowling one night, and I asked him, when you send spacecraft past other planets, actually when there's this energy exchange and the spacecraft is tossed further out at a higher speed so you can get to other places, how much does it affect Jupiter if you use Jupiter as your anchoring slingshot? And he calculated, literally there in the bowling alley, that it was literally the width of one hydrogen atom. that New Horizons literally would have stolen the equivalent of basically the size of the Bohr outer orbital of the hydrogen atom.
And then he went and rolled that atom down the alley.
Yes, exactly. So, no, you could toss spacecraft out to the outer solar system till the cows come home, and there'd be no visible difference. But you are exchanging energy. It's not something from nothing. Pluto is actually going to fall a little bit closer to the sun as New Horizons passes, so it gains energy to get through the Kuiper Belt and rendezvous with its next target in the next 2 or 3 years.
And that's just Newtonian physics.
Just plain old Newtonian and Keplerian celestial mechanics. Now, let me ask, as we're approaching the bottom of the hour.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask, where is Keith Morgan and what's going on with our NASA briefing? Keith?
They're going live.
Oh, wonderful.
Can I get the audio to you?
So, can you hear me? Richard, we will save that question.
Yes.
Keith, if we can mute that until there's an actual program, it would help. This is live radio, folks. So, Richard, let me give you another coincidence that's stunning this morning. On the same day that we're passing Pluto, on the same day that we flew by Mars, on the same day that is the 195th day of the year, incredibly important symbolically and in the physics, is the same day that we apparently have reached an historic deal with Iran. On their nuclear program. Take it away, Richard.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. When you were talking about Greece, I was thinking, well, that's a stretch in one direction, but I don't know. The whole Iran agreement seems to resonate Pluto at a much deeper level, because it's like, insofar as mythological, Pluto is going into the underworld and coming out transformed. And I'm not trying to idealize the agreement. I'm just trying to talk about the greater planetary forces at work, which are, both integrating and in collision and conflict. And this is not a political show, so I'm not going to gripe about the Israeli the Israeli reaction here. But the Israeli reaction has a very profound Plutonian element to it.
In what way?
Because
I mean, we can get political. I can do anything I want on my show.
Right, I know, but they're about to make their announcement, and I was also going to give you an aside when you mentioned Kepler about, of course, you know that Kepler found the orbit of Mars by running two mistakes together and having them, as Arthur Kessler described, he made two mathematical errors which canceled out and left him in the right place.
Which is another one of those interesting synchronous coincidences.
Yeah, synchronous coincidences. You got both together. Yeah, I hesitate to, we're talking in little sound bites, so I hesitate to get too far afield. And there's something I did want to insert at a point because, well, this is the bigger topic. Let's just see if we begin it and then we may have to just stop. But I think that there are two types of extraterrestrial intelligence that we have to take into account. And both of them are implied in the Plutonian system as we're imagining it. One is the simple ET model. They built something, they manifested on the physical plane, they built something on the physical plane, and they even did massive geoengineering interplanetary engineering on a physical plane, and they're the ones that are behind the face on Mars, the structures on the moon, etc. But then there are the intelligences that are of a whole different order. And it happened that when I was putting together the Pluto anthology, I was reading some of one of the more obscure transmissions that were done in the 70s from the what I would now call a group intelligence or multi-personhood that got named Seth.
We're talking and, channeling.
Yeah. But whatever it is, whatever Jane Roberts wrote down in Ithaca, New York in the 70s was well beyond her own informational system or intelligence. And it's a whole discussion to talk about where it came from. And I'm not going to get into that at all. I just thought the two of the statements received at different vibrations apply so well to this moment in Pluto. And I used them as kind of epigraphs at the beginning of the anthology. And one of them was, the first one was, this dimension, source realm, nurses your own world, reaching down into your system. These realities are still only those at the edge of the one in which you have your present existence. Far beyond are others, so alien to you I could not explain them. Yet they are connected with your own life, and they find expression even within the smallest cells of your flesh. Pretty impactful. Then later, operating at a different octave, which she called Seth 2.
Oops.
Looks like we're back. We'll save Seth 2. Sounds
tonight,
like the Super Bowl.
Tonight, we are celebrating the first exploration of Pluto.
And so we go to NASA and Mission Control for New Horizons.
Tonight we are celebrating a milestone in human achievement, a moment that we are all lucky enough to share together. The wait is over.
We're live at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, where the wait is indeed over. After a voyage of 3 billion miles and 9.5 years, the New Horizons spacecraft is just about 20 minutes away from flying by Pluto and completing the initial reconnaissance of the solar system. I'm Mike Buckley from APL Communications and Public Affairs, joined again by my colleague Duane Brown of NASA's Office of Communications. And Duane, with New Horizons just moments away from flying by Pluto, we are indeed on the cusp of history.
Mike, let me do this. Let me pinch myself. It's not a dream. We're here. It's game time. NASA's New Horizons mission to Pluto is one of the great explorations of our time. Scientists won't be rewriting textbooks with this historic mission. They'll be writing them from scratch. It's one of many NASA missions unlocking the secrets of the solar system and beyond. The lightweight New Horizons spacecraft is zipping through the Pluto system at more than 30,000 miles per hour with the most powerful suite of science instruments ever sent on a first reconnaissance mission. Since the day it was discovered 85 years ago, Pluto has been a harbinger of the mysteries on the far planetary frontier. With the discovery in 1930, Pluto became a preview of the icy, rocky objects in what would become known as the Kuiper Belt. And as history has already told us, it was just the first glimpse of other incredible scientific finds. And not only can you get the latest images, science findings, and mission updates right here on NASA television today and over the next several weeks, months, join the conversation via Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms talking about the July 14th flyby today. Send in your questions at hashtag PlutoFlyby. And online, mission information images, all are available at www.nasa.gov/New Horizons. Mike, wow. That's all I can say.
You can feel it in here. I mean, you know, there's an electric atmosphere at the Applied Physics Lab this morning with a lot going on. Outside our doors, it's mission team members, family, friends, and others getting ready to mark and celebrate this incredible achievement. On one part of campus, there are members of the science team getting ready to deliver some of the best views of Pluto we've ever seen. In the Mission Operations Center, not a whole lot of activity there because the spacecraft is on its own, running through the close approach operations that were programmed into its computers last week. And in fact, let's check in on New Horizons. Now, this is the Eyes on the Solar System simulation of New Horizons, called Eyes on Pluto. It's based on actual commands. And this is what the spacecraft is doing at this very moment, nearly 3 billion miles from home. And you can follow along with this on the web at eyes.nasa.gov. Now, speaking of excitement, Dwayne is going to head out to flyby Countdown Central. And while he does that, here's a message from someone who isn't as far as Pluto, but definitely out of this world.
Hi, I'm astronaut Scott Kelly aboard the International Space Station. As you know, NASA is all about exploration and discovery. Whether it is here on the ISS close to Earth, or now billions of miles away at Pluto and the far edge of the solar system known as the Kuiper Belt. Until now, Pluto has remained a mystery, the last unexplored major body in our solar system, but that's all about to change. The New Horizons spacecraft is making history after a 9-year journey as it encounters Pluto and its system of moons. I'm excited to see the first close-up images of this dwarf planet and to see NASA complete the initial reconnaissance of the distant reaches of our solar system. So from the International Space Station, I'm sending my heartfelt best wishes and congratulations to the New Horizons team. Just like me, all of us at NASA can proudly say, my other vehicle is on its way to Pluto.
Now, Dwayne Brown is outside. Let's check in with him in Countdown Central. Dwayne, lots of eyes on the clock out there.
I apologize for being late, but the crowd is so thick in here, it is unbelievable. If I close my eyes, I would think I was in New York in Times Square. Countdown. And what you're hearing now is a speech by the mission team project manager from the Applied Physics Lab. He's talking to the crowd, the experience, and everything. Everyone is so excited. And we are moments away from the countdown. And I have to tell you, I've never seen so much excitement. I've been doing this for 30 years. It is absolutely amazing here. We're going to try to get some interviews here before you, in a little while, Mike, but I'm going to toss it back to you and see if we can get some special guests.
Okay. While we're doing that, we're going to check back in on the Eyes on Pluto simulation, because you can check out the activity online at eyes.nasa.gov. To point out what you're looking at here, this is a simulation of what the spacecraft is actually doing live, and you can see the instruments moving, going through their observations, color-coded, up in the top corner, taking the scan of Pluto. And if I'm not mistaken, it looks like it's going over the heart right at this second. Amazing observations. So we'll go back and see with Dwayne if he's got his interviews. Okay, well, while Dwayne is still running those up, with us is Alice Bowman, the Mission Operations Manager for New Horizons. And Alice, I guess my first question for you would be, what are you doing here? Or shouldn't somebody be flying the spacecraft? But New Horizons is on its own, programmed to be doing all these maneuvers out near Pluto. So tell us, how does that work?
Sure, we loaded up all the commands to the spacecraft about a week ago, and it's just ticking down its checklist. Those commands are firing off at the time that the scientists want them to fire off, and so this is closest approach. This is when you get the best science. So we don't want it to point to Earth and talk to us. We want it to take science. So that's what it's doing. So many of the operations team members are here at COSI.
When was the last time we heard from it?
We heard from it last night. We started the track about 10:08 p.m. Eastern, and we had signal from the spacecraft until 11:17 p.m.
You explained it can't take data and communicate with Earth at the same time. How come?
Well, we built that spacecraft for a long-duration mission, and when you do that, you want to have as few moving parts as possible. So we have that fixed antenna on board the spacecraft, and so in order to communicate with Earth, you have to point that antenna back to Earth so that it can beam that signal. Likewise, when you take science observations, you have to take that spacecraft and you have to point those instruments to where those objects are that they want to observe.
Okay, and like you mentioned before, less time on Pluto, I mean, more time talking to Earth is less time on Pluto, and the busiest time right now for this encounter happening, you definitely don't want to be looking at Earth.
No, definitely not.
They're talking to us. Let's take us to the timeline then of what happens today and into tonight. We've seen the observations that are happening on board the rest of the day.
Well, I'll step back a teeny bit and say that we had a lot of activity in the Mach last night. We didn't have single signal from the spacecraft, but we were actually uplinking signals to the REX instrument on board. And of course, we have to start those uplinks about 4.5 hours before that experiment is taking place on the spacecraft. So we had 7 of the DSN antennas, Deep Space Network antennas, trained on New Horizons and sending an uplink signal. We started that about 3 a.m. this morning, and we continued that until about 6:30. And then we will take a little break. In a couple hours, we'll do that again. But in the operations center, you'll see us start to congregate there a little bit before perhaps 7 p.m.
Right.
And we will hopefully, I'm sure, get signal at 8:53 p.m. local. And we'll have a very short burst of 15 minutes where we'll get information from the spacecraft and we'll be able to tell you if it's healthy. And so that's our plan for today.
Yeah. I mean, with a little bit of rest in between, I would think, to make that happen. So.
Yeah,
All right, Alice, well, thank you for joining us. And, you know, good luck tonight.
Thank you.
You know, I got to say, too, I mean, the social media buildup on this has just been incredible. And, I mean, you can go to NASA Social's Jason Townsend to fill us in. I mean, Jason, I'm having a hard time not looking at my iPad here and checking out Twitter and the buzz and everything else that's going on. Tell us what's happening on social media with New Horizons. It's all over the place.
Indeed. Yes, you know, it's an exciting time. Today is a great day, and we're going to be doing live coverage all over social media on NASA's accounts out there. Right now, Pluto flyby is trending on Twitter and on Facebook. And right now, we've also got a sneak peek of the image that is going to be released at 8 a.m. this morning up on NASA's Instagram account. So lots of events, though, that our social media followers can join us and follow along and get involved with today. They're scheduled all afternoon and evening. So we'll have members of the New Horizons team ready to answer your questions starting today at noon Eastern time in a Reddit AMA on the Reddit site. At 2 p.m. Eastern time today, we'll have a question and answer session on NASA's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/NASA. And then today at 6 p.m. Eastern time, we'll be doing a tweet chat on @NASANewHorizons, where we'll be taking your questions using the hashtag AskNASA. During both of our press briefings this morning, coming up at 8 a.m., and also this evening, where we get the healthy spacecraft signal back, we'll be taking your questions and having them answered by our subject matter experts up here using the hashtag AskNASA. So there's lots that you can get involved with. So really, it's an exciting day. We hope that you're going to keep following along. We'll be posting all of the news about the Pluto flyby today on @NASA and @NASANewHorizons on Twitter, on NASA's Facebook page, Google Plus page, and Instagram accounts out there, as well as the New Horizons Facebook page. So follow along, join us, and get involved.
Yeah, Jason, I'm curious too. I mean, because there's so much coming out of the mission. I mean, there's pictures, there's conversation. What are you seeing more of online? Is it people who are talking more about the images that are coming down? Is it just the general excitement of what's happening with New Horizons? What are you seeing?
Well, I think people are definitely excited. This is one of our, you know, most incredible looks that we've had of Pluto. It's the first spacecraft to get there and take a really in-depth look. So people are kind of standing by with, you know, bated breath, waiting for the latest and greatest images and all the information that the mission's going to be returning. And so we're going to be sharing that all along on screen.
Okay. Jason, sounds good. Thanks. So remember, keep following the activity, the Twitter handle @NASANewHorizons, of course, www.nasa.gov/NewHorizons. And let's go back out to Duane Brown, Countdown Central. Duane, what's going on?
I hope you can hear me because the tension, the excitement is infectious. People from all over the world, of all ages, are so excited. They are, some are even crying, waiting for this moment. You know, I've never seen so much excitement and so much, you know, the anticipation of it. You're hearing from the Tom bombs. Tom bombs were talking to the audience, and of course, they're the daughter and son, Annette and Alden, of Clyde Tom Ball, who discovered Pluto in 1930. And again, apologize for all of the extra noise here, but, you know, here in Countdown Central, everybody just is just having a good time. It's a celebration, and I have to tell you, I'm glad to be here. I love sharing a set with you, Mike, but it's really fun to be out here. Back to you, because we're getting close to making history.
Thanks, Wayne. Yeah, I mean, I guess he got the prime spot out there. I'm here on the desk, but we're going to check back in with the spacecraft. What's going on with Eyes on the Solar System and New Horizons, and see where it is in its activity. Hundreds of observations at this point in close approach as we get closer to Pluto, 4 minutes away, a little more than 4.5 minutes away from flying by Pluto. Looking at the observations here, target right between the Pluto, they call it the Pluto Barrier Center. This is the spot of gravity between Pluto and its largest moon, Charon. Follow this online, eyes.nasa.gov. You know, this truly is an historic moment. The fastest spacecraft ever to leave Earth, about to complete the farthest voyage to reach its primary target, right now making the first exploration of Pluto and its family of moons, opening the door to an entirely new region that we've only just begun to understand. We can check back in, too, on mission operations and see again with the activity or lack of activity. We'll point out again, this is going to be the place to watch later on tonight, as we anticipate the signal coming back from New Horizons. Again, you see here, there's no activity. The spacecraft is on its own, going through all of its activity programmed into its computers. Tonight, we expect New Horizons to check back in around 9 o'clock Eastern time, check back in with a signal that would indicate that it's healthy and that it did everything it was programmed and supposed to do. We're gonna check back in with Duane outside at Countdown Central. Duane, back to you.
Mike, we are about 3 minutes away. Right now, the head of planetary science at NASA, Jim Green, is addressing the audience. I got to tell you, if you may not, I'm going to hold this up here. Everyone has an American flag. And when we have that countdown, you're going to see something really, really special. Again, the excitement is infectious. I hope that you get one of these flags, because I'm really lucky to have this, and I'm going to take it back to you, but we're getting close. Really fun out here.
Okay, in fact, I'm going to go back over to Jason Townsend with NASA Social. Jason, checking the trending out there and what's happening. What do we got?
Indeed, there's a lot of love for the sneak peek on Instagram right now of the image that's out there. We're also going to get ready here at 8 a.m. and release the image everywhere and put it out and talk all about the science behind it. So leading up here, though, to these next couple of minutes here with the flyby, people are definitely talking about it. We're still trending with Pluto Flyby on Twitter and Facebook, and getting involved in the conversation. Join us.
Indeed, continue to follow along. We're live on NASA TV, which you can follow at www.nasa.gov. Keep looking for news at www.nasa.gov/New Horizons and following along on @NASA New Horizons on Twitter, #PlutoFlyby. I think we're going to be ready to join the countdown soon out at Countdown Central with Duane Brown. Duane, activity out there, how's it looking?
Well, Mike, it's getting close here. Alan Stern, the principal investigator of the mission, has called everybody to the stage. We've had speeches, we've had remarks, we've had the son and daughter of the man who discovered Pluto in 1930, and we're getting there. We're a little over a minute out here at Countdown Central. I just, again, the excitement, and the whole world is watching this. All of the media, social media, it's just amazing. Museums, everybody is a part of history. History and science and exploration taking place right here in Lowell, Maryland at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting close. Why don't we have everybody say their name very quickly? It's almost there. Again, what you're going to see thousands, probably more than 1,000 people are crowded in this room. They're going to have American flags. They're gathering. They're hugging. It's about America. We're getting ready to make history. Let's take it and see history in the making.
Well, that seems to be an interesting celebration.
Yes. There's so many overtones there that you can't even get into them.
Well, come on, we got time. This is what radio is all about.
We do have time. I thought they were about to show.
We're going
to
do something. Hey, Lillian, can you get John?
We got about 10 minutes till the press conference starts.
They were waving flags, get started. New Horizon spacecraft passes a close approach mark at Pluto.
I think we lost them, Dick.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you hear a political campaign, you hear sporting events, you hear also that thing where there, I don't know exactly how to phrase it. It's like at a basketball game where they almost lose the game for all the noise they're making and all the bands playing and stuff. And so it feels slightly misdirectional, but that's the era, that's the time we're in. It's certainly located in the time. I also went through a brief fantasy when he was talking that what would it be like to imagine that his words were not about Pluto, but about the agreement with Iran, and they fit perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. What I'm struck by, Dick, is the very interesting stylistic change between the encounter narration that Al Hibbs was giving us from Mission Control 50 years ago and this kind of Super Bowl extravaganza that they tried to create around this. And we have no data. At this moment, at this moment, the spacecraft it could be dead. We have no way of knowing, and this woman, whoever she was, seemed to be very proud of the fact that, oh, we can't turn it around to talk to home. Well, of course you could technically have arranged for an antenna to send us, you know, a few bits per second to tell us what was going on, but for some reason they chose not to, and my curiosity is, why do they choose not to?
And, well, she, of course, is the she's the head of that whole operation, I believe.
Yes.
And, so, yeah.
Okay, Keith says they're now moving into the auditorium where they're going to have the press conference at the top of the hour. This is the one where we're going to get Stern's analysis of the image that he was teasing to us a few minutes ago.
Yep.
The one that was taken hours ago. So, of course, the ones that they're taking now and are going to send back tonight in that 15-minute burst at 9 o'clock will be, you know, actually, if they only have 15 minutes, they'll only be able to send us maybe one picture because it takes 42 minutes to send a full Lowry high-res image. So they may be taking a color shot. They may be taking what's called a Ralph image. All of these instruments are named after the various characters on the old Jackie Gleason Honeymooner show, you may have noticed. Huh. Alice and Ralph and Lowry and all that.
Just to assert something quickly, Richard, don't you feel that at the same moment we're being pulled into astrophysical Pluto, we're being pulled right into the Pluto vortex and that they're helpless to do anything about it?
Yeah, you're going on the background. The river of time is sweeping us along, and I think there's a lot more people behind the scenes who are creating this specifically to try to push the physics.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's the only difference between your approach. You've got the puppeteers there, and I've got the cosmic intelligence.
But see, it's not an either-or. It's a both.
No, it isn't an either-or, and that's why we're on the show together, and we're both named Richard. There's a third Richard, too.
Yes, and then we have all our Keiths.
Yes.
There was only one Alan, but he was the right Alan. Okay. So, Keith Morgan, where are we with their press conference?
Well, we should be
you're breaking up.
Matt's interviewing Stern. I don't know if you want that audio or not.
Yeah, sure. By all means.
Okay, let me give.
Anything Alan Stern says now that he agrees with me that Pluto's still a planet.
Time tonight. That's when we'll find out if it completed its job successfully.
Dr. Stern, congratulations. And I'll see you this evening. So, Mike, head down at Countdown Central, where you heard Dr. Grunfeld, you heard Dr. Stern, and others. America's Space Program has written a new chapter in space and exploration. Back to you.
Thanks, Dwayne. The atmosphere. You know, Pluto is no longer the unexplored world. And as one countdown ends, another begins. As you heard, we wait for New Horizons to phone home tonight and let us know that all went well. So stay tuned to NASA TV for our next media briefing. We'll get an update and our look at some of the last images that New Horizons took of Pluto before going into the flyby. So I'm Mike Buckley, and for Dwayne Brown and the New Horizons team, thanks for watching.